Welcome to the Friendly Accountant Podcast. You are stepping into the world of Jonathan Vowles, your friendly neighbourhood chartered accountant, where numbers meet a personal touch. With a passion for nurturing businesses from inception to fruition, Jonathan specialises in providing tailored individual business advice. So whether you're a budding startup or a seasoned enterprise, Jonathan's expertise will guide you through every stage of growth, ensuring your business flourishes with a focus on personalised strategies and a commitment to your success. Jonathan's not just an accountant, he's your partner in building a thriving future. And it's great to be joined by Jonathan in the studio now. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello there, Chris. Great to be here and enjoying this because my first podcast.
Very exciting for the first
Indeed.
Podcast.
Yes, it is.
And for me, as a novice, I'm a business owner and obviously always looking for advice in growing my business. This is going to be a great opportunity for me to learn along with the people listening to the podcast as we kind of understand the role of an accountant really in guiding business growth, which is really what you do.
Absolutely, yeah. Businesses have a business life cycle, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. But within each section of that life cycle, you've got problems and challenges, and you know, some accountants are just, to be demeaning slightly towards them, transactional historians. They do give you a set of accounts that adds up the past and tells you what you did. And normally they tell you what you did months after you did it. So one of the adverts I use on social media is that your annual accounts are about as much use as an ashtray on a motorbike. They do the job they're intended to be, but actually, apart from being a mechanism to provide the revenue authorities with information to tax you, they're kind of useless. They perform a function, but if you want to actually get information about your business, and more importantly, from my point of view, to get help in understanding that information and in taking it further, understanding it, what does it actually mean? What are the consequences of the information? That's the bit. That's the bit where I'm really want to make sure that we're doing what we can for our clients to make sure that they get it. They get it in a way that means that we can help to make a difference by providing information that they haven't already got. And you'd be surprised about the simple stuff as well as the complicated stuff that happens. You know, years ago, one of my clients, I'm not making as much money as I want to, and we said, okay, you're not having regular monthly or quarterly management accounting information. So we made that change. And that change highlighted something, and the business owner kind of said, oh no, you know, I've shot myself in the foot over this. I just need to pay attention to this particular section of my business. And and knowing what to do isn't the same as fixing it. It's the beginning of that journey. But they're now able to say, right, I'm not making as much money because of this bit of my business. Do I keep it? Do I bin it? Do I improve it? And they were able to start down that journey of improving it. Had another guy just last year, actually, last summer, been in business longer than I have, very experienced entrepreneur, and profits have been declining, and I'm feeling like I'm getting into a bad place, cash flow's getting problematical, where do I go from here? And there were some quite simple fixes that he had thought of and discounted because he thought, I don't feel so good about doing those. And but in terms of business common sense, it was a good thing to do. And he made a little change, and he's got a team-based business. His team went on him with that little bit of the journey, and the team felt better about the business. He felt better about the business. They ended up making more profit, and now a year later, let's go back, look at that again, because business is always moving. You have to, as soon as you think, oh, I've got one bit sorted, you've got to go back and get another bit and go over it again. Sometimes really simple changes. Sometimes it's kind of fuzzy spiritual stuff. So your work-life balance, for example. Now, everyone's aware of the term work-life balance, but how many entrepreneurs actually do much about it? Probably everybody's listening has heard about the idea of manifesting a destiny. And now the thing about manifesting a destiny is, if you just say, I want to be rich, well, that's a wish, a dream. It's not an action. So if you're going to say, right, I'm going to be rich, you then have to back that up by saying, and I'm going to get there by doing A, B, and C. And what you actually then do is you manifest on the A, B, and C and how you're going to do the big dream. So it's breaking those ideas down into things that can actually happen. And guess what? That's your action plan. All of a sudden we've gone from something that some people think is a bit out there and fuzzy and American, if you can use that phrase, of manifestation. But actually, it comes back to making a plan and taking actions, but thinking positively is a big part of that.
I think a lot of it comes down to really understanding how your business is performing. And I think that's one of the important roles of the accountant. Like you say, it's not about a weather forecast that just tells you what the weather was like a year ago. It's about understanding what your business is doing now, having some clarity on the numbers, and being able to see the difference that little changes are making and knowing that you're moving in the right direction. But unless you've got that visibility and that understanding of how your business is actually performing, you're basically driving blind, aren't you?
You are driving blind. And if you've got, if accounts are the history, then your business plan is the roadmap, sat-nav, for where you want to get to. Now, when you do a business plan, and hopefully everybody who runs a business and listening to this has actually done a business plan, your business plan would have been that gentle, smooth slope from where you are to something better. And actually, real life is, it goes up and down, you go sideways, you get into a maze and have to reverse out of the cul-de-sac and go in a different direction. And so your business plan is the journey of the direction of travel. It's where you want to go towards, not necessarily the specifics, because real life is what happened to plans.
There's so much in business that completely blindsides you. Things that come out of nowhere that you're not expecting.
Yeah.
Challenges that you've got to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely.
And it's looking at the bigger picture and making sure you're still going in the right direction.
Sure.
Even while you're dealing with the immediate issues.
Absolutely. For example, one that's a business that I've come across last couple of years, they used to, it's a logistics business, they used to transport stuff into Russia. Because of the Ukraine war, the government said, can't deal with anything Russia. And, the day that the Minister for State said that, 20% of their business ceased to exist. And do they make people redundant? Do they redeploy them? If they redeploy them, how long is it going to take to make additional sales to get business in to pay for those people? How does it all come out? And that's a real business problem. And if you start doing planning and getting into the detail, one of the things you want to look at are, what are the issues that affect your business? And this affects you whether you're a startup or a more seasoned business, or you're looking to exit from your business, whatever stage of the business life cycle you're in, these are questions you need to ask. And the bigger and more involved your business, the bigger and more involved the issues that can impact on you. And some of them are nice ones. So we're recording this in spring of 2024, and the tax rules have just changed so that people who are sole traders and employees pay a little bit less national insurance. So your tax bill has gone down by a few percent. And that's a really nice legislative change. At the same time, there's another legislative change that's going to happen probably next spring. The government haven't actually announced it. And hey, will they be the same government by this time next year? That's always a question. But they've announced they're reviewing child benefit. And that'll be something that might put taxes up. You don't know. And, you know, you've got to be aware of those big things. Can't do much about politics. But what you can do is build in an understanding of, well, if A happens, I want to do B, and if B happens, I want to do C. And that's the purpose of your business plan. It's to think about the journey and the issues so that you can be prepared, not just for when things go right, but when things go wrong as well.
So is it about kind of understanding all the things that might happen and allowing a bit of a buffer for changes in taxation, changes in, you know, child benefit payments and all those kind of things?
Well, those were kind of really specific examples. And you'd think if you're starting a business, you'd think more about what happens if my suppliers put their prices up, or what happens if my van breaks down and I can't deliver stuff. What happens if, one of my clients, what happens if my landlord gives me 3 months to vacate and I can't find anywhere suitable to store my stuff, and I end up having a fire sale to get rid of the what's in the warehouse, and the remainder gets destroyed, and all of a sudden you're thinking, oh man, this is, you know, my landlord's really messing me around. But from the landlord's point of view, you know, his point was, I've got to sell up, I've got to cash out my business, so I'm selling the property. That means you've got to go, because the guy I'm selling it to doesn't want to have anybody renting their stuff. They want to use it for themselves. And all of these external forces, they're all out there. You know, you kind of think, oh, I'm set for life. I've got a level playing field. No, you don't. You know, VAT, this year, the VAT registration threshold has gone up from £85,000 to £90,000. And there's a way of measuring that you need to know if you're getting close to that threshold. However, it's very likely that the VAT threshold will come down, and come down fairly significantly, by about half. And you've got to be prepared for what happens if it goes down, as well as what happens if it goes up. And if it goes down, there'll be all sorts of effects. And if you're a small business, a startup business that hasn't registered a VAT yet, VAT or not is quite an important question. And you know, the obvious impact is you become 20% more expensive for your customers at a stroke, but you're not making any more money. You've got more cash going through the system because you're collecting money for the taxman and then paying it to them. But you've not got any more profit yourself. So the customers...
But you can suddenly start claiming back the VAT that you've spent on your business expenses. Yeah. But a lot of the time, that's not going to be
as large as what you're
bringing in, hopefully.
Absolutely, yeah. There are some businesses where the VAT they can reclaim is substantial, typically export businesses. But if you're a domestic UK business, the VAT you can reclaim on your costs is very nice to have, and thank you very much, but it's not going to make you profitable. Your business has to be profitable, excluding the impact of VAT.
So if your customers are mostly business-to-business customers who are going to be VAT registered, registering for VAT isn't necessarily going to put anybody off. But if you're dealing with consumers, you're effectively putting your prices up.
Yeah, and that's where it really impacts people. As you say, most businesses are VAT registered, and therefore selling to them, VAT or not, makes no difference. But if you're selling to a consumer, then all of a sudden, you know, you're a plumber or a landscape gardener or a DJ, you're selling stuff to customers, and all they can see is, oh, your costs have gone up. You're way more expensive than you were this time last year. And how do you communicate that? How do you turn that from a disaster into a public relations success story?
And you're also competing against other businesses that aren't VAT registered when you're at that stage.
Yes, very much
who are undercutting you.
Very much so. And actually, over the last 10, 15 years, that's been an argument for reducing the VAT registration threshold so that more businesses have a level playing field. If we go to Europe, for example, the VAT registration thresholds, well, in France, it's €10,000, whereas here in the UK, as I said, it's now £90,000. If we had a similarly low VAT registration threshold, then that would mean that people who were hobbyists, you know, people who run a market stall once a month and or something like that, that they're in it for the hobby and the fun, and they're not going to need to worry about VAT registration. But anybody who's actually running a business seriously would.
I think also people that have maybe got a second property that they rent out, or they do a little bit of Airbnb and they have a spare room, or suddenly it's going to reach a point where even people that are selling quite a lot on eBay are suddenly going to have to start thinking about
that. Well, eBay is a particular one. The tax man's after you, if you weren't already aware. But as far as property landlords or Airbnb landlords, most times that sort of letting isn't a VAT qualifying activity, and therefore you don't need to worry about it. Sometimes it can be. It all depends. If you're just renting a room, that's no VAT. If you're renting a room that looks like a hotel room and it's got those sorts of hotel services, then the fat man says you're running a business, you do have to worry about VAT.
So you never put a trouser press in your room or a little mini bar?
A trouser press, yes. Mini bar, you have to think about that because that's more likely a no. But just last week there was a tax case for a business had quite a lot of business. It was $4 million turnover business. So they were effectively running Airbnb. They had 253 flats they were running it from. So, you know, that's what is big business.
Big scale.
And in London as well. But HMRC took them to the court and said, you've got to charge VAT on this because you're doing the cleaning, you supply a chef, you buy the food if they want you to. They've got clothes cleaning. And basically they said, you're a hotel, but you don't call yourself a hotel. So you should charge VAT just like hotels do.
So was this one of these sort of service department type operations?
Yes. I mean, it was set up in a way that they believed wasn't going to be caught by the VAT regulations, but the judge said otherwise. So now they've got a tax bill of 20% of £4 million a year, and wow, that's going to sting. So the problem of getting tax wrong is sometimes extreme.
Absolutely, and this is why having an accountant who takes the time to keep up to date on these things, but also can give you that advice of saying, just this week, somebody running a similar business to you has just been caught out, so you need to start thinking about this.
You've got to think about those sort of things. Mm. And, okay, that was a really big business, but if you're running a service department and your business in totality is over £85,000-£90,000, then you've got to think, okay, what does this case and others like it, what do the VAT regulations mean for me and my business? And that's just one little thing, you know, and that's looking at tax, and obviously tax is a quite specific thing. But also, if you think of borrowing money in your business, loads of people in the pandemic took out bounce back loans, and they're now having to repay those loans. Yeah. And, you know, borrowing money is great, but how do you repay it? And how did they spend the money? Because most businesses use their bounce back money to stay alive, to pay wages and stuff like that. They didn't use it to invest in developing and improving their business. So they haven't necessarily built up and developed their business to be bigger and more profitable to give them the cash to pay back the bounce back loan. And as interest rates go up, whether you've got a home mortgage or whether you've got a business loan, your interest cost goes up and it makes it harder to pay back the money. So, you know, what's your plan? You know, if you've got a mortgage, if you overpay, if you pay more than your minimum mortgage payment, you pay it off quicker, you pay less interest. Same thing happens with a business loan. And so managing your money is really important, whether you're an individual or whether you run a business.
And I think it's also about looking at the balance between debt and investment. And if you're putting money into savings, that are at a lower interest rate than what you're paying on your debts, mm-hmm. then, you know, you might be better off paying your debts off first.
Well, you see, it really depends. Because if you think about this, if you've got a mortgage and you're paying, let's say, 5% interest on your mortgage, you could pay £100 extra into your mortgage and that would save you 5% interest. Or you could put £100 into a savings account and you might get 3.5%, 4% interest on that savings account. But also you could put that £100 into a pension fund where it might earn 8%, 10%. And what's the best thing? And that's almost an individual decision. The honest answer is live on beans and fresh air and put as much money into all three as you can, because you need to provide for the future in various ways. But it does come down to what are your circumstances? What can you do? And most people don't put enough into their pensions. Most people don't save enough for their future. And some people are really on it in terms of paying back mortgages and or into pensions or into savings, but most people aren't. And it's so important. You know, if you were to think about, so today I bought a coffee and it was a well-priced coffee, £2.85. And that meant that, but that meant I spent money. I could have brought something from home. I could have a bottle of water. And, you know, all of these things I'm looking at and saying, okay, what are my personal choices and how does that impact on what I can do with my cash?
Yeah, absolutely. So what are the other things that we should be thinking about when we're running a business, and how closely do your personal finances kind of intertwine with business? When you're a sole trader, I find that it's very closely linked, and
absolutely,
it's very
yeah.
hard to kind of separate what you're doing in your personal life with how the business is performing. And a lot of the time you've got that sort of crossover. Sometimes, you know, the business is performing well, but you're not, or you're doing well, and you find you're putting a lot of money into the business as a result. And I think it's about finding that balance. So how do you make sure that you're getting everything above board and you're keeping everything kind of flowing in both areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So for most people, most entrepreneurs, when they start a business, they're really embedded into the finances, the personal and the business finances. It's really hard to find that separation. And, you know, so you do things to manage and improve it. You have a separate business account from your personal account. If you've got business expenses, you make sure they're going through the business account, not the personal account. And that when it comes down to taking money out of the wage, out of the business account for your wages, that's a separate transaction, so things can be identified. And when you're starting up, typically it's all higgledy-piggledy. It's just, you know, I'm spending money. I'm not getting much coming back in, but I'm spending money. And then as you go through the startup process and you start to invoice and make money, then you can say, right, I'll take some of this to pay back the money that I've invested, or I'll take some of it for a wage. And as your business develops, you can separate more easily. But certainly to begin with, for most people, it's just one great big pot until I've managed to separate everything out and get some clarity into what's mine and what's the business.
And I think you do find that when you're living that way and you're running your business
yes.
out of your personal bank account, that the first tax return is a big job. Before you give it to the accountant, you've got to go through and unpick everything and say,
absolutely,
that was a business expense, that wasn't, that's personal. And also understanding what you can claim back and what you can't.
And that's a big issue. I mean, that is a common question. We had that today in the office. One of my colleagues was emailing somebody with, a quick synopsis of what can you and what can't you claim. And for those of you out there who would like an answer, the answer is there isn't a list. And that's because pretty much everything that's on the list goes on both on both sides, on the you can and you can't side of the list.
Because so does it depend what your business is?
Well, it depends why you're spending the money. Because if I'm spending the money because I'm in business, it's a business expense. If I'm spending the money because I'm Jonathan or I'm Chris, and therefore for personal reasons, it's personal money.
Okay, so for example, if you are an entertainer on the stage mm-hmm. and you have to get your hair cut so that you look good yep. when you're performing in front of the public, but you would have had to get your hair cut anyway
yep.
as a human being, is that claimable or
well,
not?
So we've got that. We've got some people who are in that sort of business. And so we've got somebody who's on TV, and every time they're on TV, they get their hair cut the day before. And that one, the one they get done the day before they go on screen, tax deductible. Hmm. So if they're on screen all the time, all of their haircuts are tax deductible. If they're on screen once a month, then once a month their haircuts are tax deductible. If they're on screen for a couple of months and they've got a big break, any costs during that big break aren't tax deductible. And by the same token, if you're a lady, it's not just the hair, it's your nails as well. If you're an entertainer, you normally have stage clothing, so you'll have, you know, one set of clothing that's for the business, for when you're on screen or on stage, and you'll have another set of clothing for when you're off screen, you're at home, or whatever it happens to be. And in that sense, you can have business clothing. Otherwise, for most ordinary businesses, business clothing has to have a conspicuous advert. So you see builders with embroidered polo shirts.
Yeah.
You see football players with shirts with their names and numbers on. That is business clothing. So if you have business clothing in your business, that's tax deductible. But if, so here I am today, I'm wearing a suit, my suit isn't tax deductible. Now, I only wear this suit for business, but I could wear it for other things. And
but if you got your logo emblazoned on
it. But if I had my logo emblazoned on it, absolutely, it then becomes business clothing. And if you're in the sort of occupation where you need to have protective clothing, you know, high-vis, hard hat, gloves, toe-tector boots, then all of that protective clothing is also business clothing. And if you're in the sort of business where you provide a staff uniform, so you go to the dentists and all of the staff are wearing scrubs. You go to a hospital, everyone's wearing scrubs. And the reason is that's tax deductible as uniform. And it's then down to making sure that you have this distinction between what's tax deductible and what isn't. And for those of you out there thinking, how can I make the most of that particular tax deduction? Well, we can help you find a clothing supplier that will embroider everything apart from your underwear. Well, they might do underwear. I've seen socks, haven't seen underwear. But they'll embroider everything with your business logo so that you can wear business clothing even when it feels like perhaps you're not.
Okay, we don't want to kind of ponder what sort of businesses might need branded underwear. Yeah. And what are the consequences of getting it wrong? What can happen? Is it common for somebody who's self-employed to get an inspection? You hear a lot about VAT inspections, but do normal tax returns often get checked?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, every tax return gets checked by the taxman's computer, so it goes through a checking process. However, only a proportion of tax returns get pulled for an investigation, kind of like an audit by the taxman. Mm. And if you're a cash-intensive business, you can expect more investigations. They spin round quite frequently. If you only work on bank transfers and you work in a business that's not controversial, that's plain vanilla, and this is plain vanilla in the taxman's terms, then you're unlikely to get a tax inspection, or it'll be, you know, quite a few years in between. But we help people who've got tax investigations, and if you've got it wrong, according to the taxman, then they'll work out from your accounts what that amount wrong is. They'll work out the tax bill. And they'll say, you've got a tax bill, and it could be quite small or large. So we worked with one firm that had made a mistake on their employees' payroll. Their mistake wasn't in terms of paying people minimum wage or not giving them pay slips every month. And yes, that can happen out there because there are some bad employers. It was actually a mistake in providing information to the tax man and making sure that they had paid all the appropriate taxes. They ended up with £1 million tax bill for 4 years worth of badly done paperwork. So I'm grateful to say my firm wasn't responsible for doing any of that paperwork. We were called in to help with the investigation. But suddenly getting a tax bill for £1 million, and don't forget, the tax man charges interest, so they had interest to pay because it went back a few years, and that was a big example.
So would that have put them out of business, do you think?
It hasn't. This is like three or 4 years ago now, and they agreed a payment plan with the tax man, and they're paying so much a month, and
over the next million years.
Yeah, well, they're if you've got £1 million tax bill, then you've got a bigger business, so they're able to cope with it. And by the same token, one of my clients a few years ago, this particular chap, his parents lived in India. And when they died, they left him their stuff. That included a house and a bank account. He left the house and the bank account in India, rented the house out, and just the bank account just sat there. And if he went back to visit relatives, he'd spend some money, but otherwise it just earned interest. He didn't tell the tax man about those because, well, they're in India. They're nothing to do with the UK. Wrong answer, I'm afraid. He had a tax bill, and the tax on the interest in his Indian bank account was as big as the value of his Indian bank account. So he ended up just saying, well, thanks, Mum, but I've paid it all to the tax man. Now, admittedly, he should have told the tax man, and if he'd told the tax man each year, his actual bill would have been a lot smaller, because the bill he ended up with was tax and interest and penalties, and his penalties were 100% of the tax. So he had some ginormous penalties as well as the tax he had to pay. And you get all sorts. You know, common ones are, I've got a buy-to-let property, but I've not told the tax man about it, and I need help in going back and telling them. We're doing one of those at the moment. A few years ago, we had a customer that the tax man's decided, for whatever reason, that they were going to do a 100% check of everything that happened in his business for 2 years.
How far back are they allowed to go?
Well, they can go back up to 20 years if they think there's fraud.
Okay.
Typically, they'll choose one VAT return or one tax year and or whatever, something quite small and manageable. And if they find a mistake, they'll then say, well, let's go back 4 years and we'll just do 4 years. But that's really quite annoying. So this particular firm, they had a full books and records check. The tax man wanted to look at every receipt, every sales invoice, every bank statement, go through absolutely everything. And at the end of it, they said, well, you know, we found, you know, maybe £800-900 worth of errors, but trivial stuff. And they said, okay, sorry to trouble you, goodbye. Had another one where it was a small shop, a husband and wife running a shop, and, you know, cigarettes, tobacco, convenience store, that sort of thing. And the tax man looked at one of their VAT returns and said, oh, we think you've made a mistake on your VAT return. So for this particular quarter, it was whatever number it was, and then said, right, but we're going to assume you've made the same error for the last 4 years. So actually, we're going to multiply that number by, 4 years times four quarters, because you do your VAT return every 4 quarters. And all of a sudden, you got a huge VAT bill.
Yeah.
And so tax is a particular issue. But in a way, that's a subset. Getting your tax right is obviously really important, but that's a subset of what we do. Because honestly, if you're well organized, you don't need to worry about getting things wrong. So it's actually, can we help you to get organized? So talking to somebody at the moment about a relatively small business, maybe £100,000 turnover, and we're putting them onto a cloud accounting package called Xero, xero.com. And what we're going to do is we're going to use this to organize their bookkeeping. So we don't have issues because it's there laid out plain.
Do you find
simple.
That actually it tends to be the businesses where it's all done on spreadsheets or just,
yes.
you know, backs of envelopes and carrier bags full of receipts that are the ones where it's more likely that errors are going to
keep I mean, hopefully that sort of business is becoming less and less because, you know, when I first became an accountant, a long time ago now, ladies and gentlemen, but when I first became an accountant, your accounting's computerized accounting was hideously expensive. But now it's so cheap. It really is so cheap that every business can have it. And
actually, shout out to NatWest because I get free online accounting software with my bank account, which all NatWest customers do, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a software called Free Agent, third most popular accounting software in the UK. Not as good as Xero, sorry.
I find it really easy to use, though. I've tried Xero, and it's a steep learning curve for me with Xero. Free Agent, I just picked it up straight away.
I think it kind of depends what you're used to. Every software product, and there are lots of them out there, every software product has pros and cons. The key is, are you organized? Because if you're organized and you've got a way to make sure things are I dotted and T crossed as you go along, you're not building up a problem, you're not saying, oh, I'm going to save all this up till the end of the month or end of the quarter or end of the year, because your bookkeeping, your accounting records, that's the housework, that's housekeeping. You've got to do it as you go along. You wouldn't save up your laundry and do it once a year.
Well, you say that. Not anymore.
Not anymore. And there are some businesses that do save up, and they're typically one of the ones that have problems. But if you do it as you go along, firstly, it's less hassle. So that's kind of what we're about as accountants in terms of looking at your accounting system and processes. How do we make it streamlined, less hassle, simple? And there are some useful software apps out there that can help you do that. But also, how do you then translate the day-to-day into what happens at the year end for your accounts and your tax bill? But also, how do you get useful information out of there? So at the moment, we're dealing with a customer who previously everything was based on spreadsheets, and we're migrating them onto an accounting package. And they made a loss last year. Now, I'm pretty certain one of the reasons they made a loss last year is they didn't have information as they went along about what their business was doing. So that's one of the things that we'll put in place. And it'll take a couple of months to get that working and to start seeing the results of it. But what I anticipate is as soon as we've managed to get some management information, we'll be able to go to the director and say, you've missed a trick. And as soon as we've analysed the numbers, you can look at this and say, oh yeah, I now see what's going wrong.
That's the beauty of these systems, that you just, as soon as you log in, you get that dashboard, you can
Absolutely.
See what's coming in, what's going out, who's not been paying you, where, you know, how, what
Absolutely.
Your aged invoices are looking like, and you can see where the issues are. Where's your cash flow
yeah.
falling down? Is it one particular customer that's causing the problem? Is it one supplier?
Yeah.
How's it all kind of fit together?
Absolutely. And the bigger and more complicated your business, the more issues we've got. So we're we're going through it now, but we're going through it not with a small startup business, but with a business that's over £350,000 turnover, and their last accountant was their model was to do everything using Excel and spreadsheets. Okay, I'm different. I believe that we use the tools that make it easier, less hassle, more streamlined and stuff like that. But now we've got to implement that. And once we've got that system, we then got to analyse the numbers. And so there's a different set of skills that we're bringing as an accountant. But his last accountant was a qualified accountant. They just did things a different way around. And for me, they were historical. they could tell you what happened a year ago, but they're not able to give you dead current, useful information, which is what we try to do. And that's how you can actually look at your business as it's going along, rather than looking back and saying, hey, last year was awful, or last year was good. We can look back and say, last month was good or bad. And then we can say, and what are we going to do about it? And that's the point. That's one of the big keys. For us, the accounts form the middle third of what we're doing. So the beginning is we've got to do the planning and organising and the streamlining and the thinking about what you want your business to be. We then do the accounts, whether that's monthly, quarterly or annually. But we do the accounts to say we're measuring how well you're doing on your ideas and plans. And then the next third is, well, okay, now we've got this information and we can compare it to your plans. What are we going to do with that information? How can we use that? Because a set of accounts, just a list of numbers. And honestly, that's kind of boring. Even for an accountant, looking at a set of accounts is kind of boring. The interesting bit is, what do they mean? What are the consequences? What can we do to make them better? Because the key out of all of this is, let's go back to the very beginnings. If you run a business, one day you sat up and in bed and you said, I'm going to start a business. And you had this idea. And part of your idea would have been what the business does. The other part of the idea is the why you're doing it. So are you doing it to because you're just so intensely frustrated that somebody else can't do it right that you want to do it right? In which case, how do you relieve that frustration, make sure you do it right, and get paid for it and profitably at the same time? Or you might have said, oh, I'm just not earning enough money. I need to make a business so that I can make more money and have the lifestyle I think I deserve. In which case, well, okay, let's go back. What lifestyle do you want? What's your business doing? What are the things that we can do about it? And that's a really important question to ask. Every business owner should ask themselves that question. And if you haven't done it in the last year, do it this afternoon when you're listening to this.
And I think also understanding that it's a business, not a hobby. You know, you should be, whatever it is that your business is, you should be making money from it. Otherwise, it's not actually a business.
Absolutely. And very early on in my business life, somebody said to me, it doesn't matter how big your business is, are you doing it professionally? And now, it was somebody who wanted to sell me a bigger and better computer system. That phrase, are you in business professionally, or are you a bit amateurish? Are you just playing at it? Is it just a hobby? And if it's just a hobby, recognise that. And you know, I've got a couple of customers, their business is a hobby, you know, and it's there to give them interest. It's there to give them an outlet for a particular area of creativity. And that's fabulous, because the business is doing the job it's there for, and they've got particular aspirations. You know, do they want to make a profit out of it? Yeah, of course they do. But why are they making a profit out of it? And one of them is an artist. It's very creative. They create paintings. And the business is a way to pay for them. In fact, I've got a couple of clients like this. The business is a way for them to pay for their hobby and make a bit of money on top. And, you know, I've got another business that is a rural business. It's not quite a farm. It's a small holding. And they started off their business as a blog, you know, and they realized that they had captured a particular segment of society. They could turn their blog into a business. But the blog was about their interest in being smallholders and running a small holding. So does it make vast amounts of money? No, of course not. It's a really small business. It's based around a hobby. But they've turned it from a pure hobby that makes a loss and is just there to be of interest to something that actually generates a profit, pays for itself, means that they can get more and different and better. So they started off with planting fruit and vegetables. Then they added in chickens. Then they added in pigs. And, you know, and it really has developed and grown, and it's taken on something, and it's become this really riveting, exciting, you think of telly programs like, you know, Matt Baker about his family farm. It's interesting learning about this stuff and seeing the challenges. My client's doing the same things, but with a small holding. And it is rivetingly interesting.
Amazing. Well, we're nearly out of time for the first podcast, but we've covered a lot of stuff here. And I think the key thing is just really the difference an accountant makes to your business. And a lot of businesses, when they reach that size, they have somebody working for them that's an accountant outsourcing it. Mm-hmm. What you offer is that same level of advice and business planning, forecasting, understanding where your business is going and how it's performing now, and helping
trying
to produce those targets and making sure that your business is continuing to grow through the journey.
Absolutely. And some of our clients just want the set of accounts, the tax return. Others, they do want the planning service. They do want the measurement and management improving service. Every business is different. Every business person is different. And also, when you're looking at accountants out there, folks, not every accountant is the same. So decide what sort of help you want from your accountant and whether the accountants you're talking to can give you that help.
And I think the key thing is, as you say, being friendly. And this is what this podcast is all about. That
absolutely.
You want to be able to sit down. And a lot of it is about admitting when things aren't going great. And you need to be able to have that relationship with your accountant that you can say, look, this has been a tough time.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, also, I'm going to be philosophical. Sorry, folks. But I believe there's kind of a whole life issue here. I think everybody is placed on the earth to enjoy themselves, to have happiness, and to try and build happiness in other people. So if you're unhappy in your business, you'll be radiating that stress to your team and your customers. How do you find the happiness in your business? And part of that is you want to reduce the stress, you want to improve the profitability, and you want to have a work-life balance so that you have family time. And all of these things kind of come together. We've called our business the Friendly Accountants because we want to be friendly and engage and to have that theme of happiness and trying to get there. And I freely admit sometimes we make mistakes and we get it wrong. And if we think we got it wrong, we'll stick our hands up and we'll do something about it. And that's part of being in business as well. You know, we make mistakes. You've got to recognize that. And somebody far more intelligent and famous than me said, it's not about making mistakes. It's about getting up, acknowledging the mistake and doing something to rectify it.
Amazing. Thank you for your time today, Jonathan. We are going to be doing this regularly. So if you'd like to hear more, do like, subscribe, and keep listening to the podcast. And if you have any questions that you'd like us to discuss or any areas you'd like us to talk about on the podcast, then do get in touch with us. The contact details are on the podcast. But thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again for the next episode.